Here we go.
Okay, so, call this meeting to order. First of all, just a very brief report from me. The conversations about our academic story and academic identity are continuing, and I'm certainly enjoying them, and I think some others are too. So we had a great lunch yesterday in the faculty center in the library, which I encourage you all to check out. Check out some of the Moodle training or come to one of those lunches. The president and about 10 faculty members had a great conversation over lunch. We've added some breakfast conversations that the provost and I will be having at Northlight Books starting a week from tomorrow at 8 a.m. at Northlight. So if you're a morning person and or you teach Wednesdays at noon, that'd be a great time to come for that conversation and have a good breakfast. But you have to buy your own. So, the breakfast meeting is Friday the 21st, 8 a.m. at Northlight Books. Open invitation, drop in. All right, are there any changes to the agenda? Right, so item number two, I've given a time certain of 3:45 to. Are there any reports? Anybody with a report that would like a time certain to make sure it gets in? All right, any objection to approving the agenda? All right, the agenda's approved. The minutes of September 29th are not quite ready yet, so we'll look at those at the next meeting. And we have one proxy, which is Liz Birch, just pretending to be Mark or Kelly. All right, I've received no correspondence to speak of, so we'll move on to, why don't we go ahead and do this first business item and then do some reports. So, Caroline Fisher.
Hi, everybody. This business item is required because we have now gone through one full extension of our election nomination period. And at this time, we have enough candidates for all but one of the positions, at least if we go by the bylaws as they currently are written. In other words, we have at least one person more than the required number of people we need for the position, except for the at-large rep to APC. We only have one person. And since there's one slot that needs to be filled, we technically should have two. However, if we waive our regulations as they stand, we can go ahead and go forward with this election. And since we've now gone through two full nomination cycles, it would be a good idea. Structure and Functions has recommended that we waive the regulations and go forward and have the election. And
so, this is, I'm going to use this meeting to remind us a little of our procedure, too. The bylaws say that all business items get two readings. So if we, we'll have to do a wave of first reading on this if somebody makes a motion, and we want to make it all happen here. So let's see, Senator Lutton, I think was first.
I just wanted to point out that it says that there have to be twice as many nominees as the opposition. Not just one more. So I think we actually do have two problems here. The at-large SDS says...
You're absolutely right.
So, would anybody like to make a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that we waive the first meeting.
Well,
second.
First, I think we need a motion to proceed with the election. With current nominees.
I will make that motion.
Okay. I'm gonna say Senator Wilson made that motion. Somebody second it?
I will second it.
Senator McCauley seconded it, and then Senator Hess. Is there any discussion on that motion to proceed to the election?
You mean that as an agenda?
No, it's already on the agenda.
It's on the agenda.
What was this last motion?
that was a motion to do what Structure and Functions asked for, which is to proceed with the election. Senator Hess.
I would like to move that we waive the first reading.
Second.
All right, any objections to waiving the first reading? All right, so we're at second reading. Any discussion? Senator Brand.
What are we reading?
If you look in the packet.
Any further discussion? Senator Walker.
I know it will be unpopular and probably in the minority of that, but it seems that the problem that is represented here with the election represents a bigger problem. It is a systemic problem where there is not enough faculty that is eligible to serve on committees or even in the Senate. And it would be for that reason out of principle, even though I might be the only voice, that I would object to waiving the bylaws for this instance, simply because it adds to the problem rather than resolving it. The next step in my perception will be that we will not have enough members for the filling the nomination. So it is a systemic problem, and putting a patch on it, in my perception of understanding of things, is not true.
Senator Hess.
I absolutely agree with what was just said, but I know being one of the applicants for one of the positions, I'm attending the meetings now, not knowing if I'll be there or not, and so I can't fully participate, and that really needs a member, and has needed one for a while. So if we could just do this time, as we seek to address the systemic situation, I think that might be better.
Any further discussion? Senator Wilk.
Leaving the position space, I think, is a bigger problem.
Any further discussion? Okay, so we're voting on the motion to proceed with the election with the current slate of nominees. All those in favor, raise your hand. Those opposed? All right, the motion carries. Thank you. So we'll move on to do a few reports. President Parmignano, would you like to give a report?
The end of the first quarter revenues for the state shows that there are $739 million below projection. The budget agreement called for the triggers to be pulled for higher education at up to $100 million, both for the CSU and UC. If those revenues come for the entire year to be less than $1 billion. The fact that in the first quarter, so that is $539 million, I think indicates almost a certainty that the trigger will be pulled by the end of December. The question now is it a one-time pull or is it a permanent pull? And that's makes hell of a lot. I think we can be almost sure that the trigger will be pulled later on. That's kind of my report.
Are there questions for residents? All right. Move on to our next report, which is Provost Robertson. Sorry, I guess you just if you come in the door.
No, that's good. I'm almost ready. Three things. I conducted the Provost meeting in LA. So, first thing that I think you should be aware of is that 17 of the provosts have organized themselves into a strategic group to look at research and scholarship across the CSU, which is quite exciting, actually. They've identified five action groups, and the 17 provosts have been split up into different action groups. I'm in the group that's trying to promote and publicize the importance of undergraduate and graduate instructionally related research in the CSU. There's a second group looking at how to promote more system-wide affinity groups, like the COAST program, which is in existence. There's another group trying to define metrics that could be used to measure any outcomes of this incentive. There's another group looking at the issue of research space, which is obviously an issue in all the campuses. And finally, there's a fifth group defining the doctoral culture, if you like, it's evolving within the CSU. So how this all unfolds, I don't know, but it sounds quite exciting, including research and scholarship as it relates to instructional activities in the CSU right there at the forefront. So I'll keep you posted on that. The second item that you might be aware of is there's two executive orders just came out, 1062 and 1064. These came about as a result of an audit, and we've now been told that we have to do site visits annually for all our internships and field courses. This is obviously causing a lot of dismay amongst the provosts. It's totally impractical. There is a group of provosts going to be sitting trying to make recommendations over the next year to modify that, but for the time being, it's an executive order, so we shall do our best to comply. We obviously can't go out to every site that an intern goes to. We are making concessions that we could check out sites on the internet. We could accept prior history of going to a particular site as evidence that it's okay and low risk, because it's all about risk management. But this is something that caused a lot of dismay amongst the provost. There's a lot of arguments why this should not be imposed on us. It's clearly not good for the instructional components of the university. So stay tuned, but we will have to probably start putting a policy together for this campus. And then the other one, of course, which is a hot button item, it was back to Executive Order 1440. The Board of Trustees are dismayed that only 16 programs so far have managed to come up with a TMC. That's that arrangement with the community colleges to enable them to come in and finish the degree in 60 units. This has been put back to the universities to look at those programs again to try and get many more of them. I think yes. And I'm going to have to be working with the deans, and the deans will then be working with the different departments to take another look at those programs that were a no to see if there's a way we can accommodate a yes. There is a lot of pressure coming down to make this happen. There's a sense that the trustees and the legislature could end up forcing it upon us in ways that you would rather not happen, such as standardized curriculum. So we do need to take this seriously, pay attention to it, ask the question, can this 60-unit experience that the community college students have had, does that satisfy the necessary requirements of the degree program so that they can then finish in 60 units? Those are my three
items. Senator Lees. So, first of all, thank you for the fair warning so we can think of some incentives to get our students to do internships abroad and nice places. Also, in terms of these provost groups that are working on research, are any of these groups working on trying to determine what impact the research has that we do in the CSU?
I think that's part of the group that I'm in, because it's not only how to promote more research and scholarship activities, it's also to get that out to the public to really show the importance of this. So I think that's covered. And again, this is just first steps, so it's yet to be determined how all this is going to play out. But basically, the decision has that this will be on the agenda of all subsequent provost meetings, so it's been taken very seriously. And I was very encouraged that 17 out of 23 provosts showed up at the meeting. So that looks good.
Senator Sengas. So these executive orders 1062 and 1064, it's covering internships and what's the other category?
Field courses.
Okay, so field courses. And how about those underway? This is effective beginning when? Effective immediately. So ones that are ongoing are in jeopardy if we kind of...
No, we don't want anything to be in jeopardy. And believe you me, there was about a 45-minute discussion about this at the meeting. And some campuses have actually stopped putting some internships out there, and that is not the intention of this. I think the soft approach that seems palatable for now that emerged was that each campus should at least look at their policy for internships and field courses with a view to, is there a risk to the student? And of course, there's always a risk when you leave the classroom, get on an airplane, but is the risk acceptable? And so we really have to be able to show that we've looked at all our offerings, and majority of them we probably can just say, well, we've gone there for 3 years in the past, and we know this site or this area that we're taking the field trip to, or we may be able to do a web search and say that this internship in this bank is real because the bank is real and it is there. But it's a poorly thought out executive order, and that was really the takeaway message of the provost, who were very angry. This had not been brought to the academic forefront before it was implemented. And we may see some changes in it, but for now we just live with it. I mean, it was brought up. It just means that if a student teacher goes into a classroom, you know, to do a student teacher experience, that we have to go to that school in case they trip over a bench. I mean, it gets ridiculous. But no one had any answers for that. You know, how far do you take it? So I think on this campus, we will look at what we're doing. We'll look at all the internships. We'll make sure that there is a policy that we're adhering to. And that's it. So just be aware you might be asking for information about where you're sending your students.
That's Chair Winger.
Oh, okay. Actually, Richard sort of asked what I was thinking, but so I'm going to use it to express a concern. For example, I do a field program in Belize, so I would be interested in, I mean, there's certainly lots of potential risks at a location like that, so I was just wondering who's sort of, what's the standard, and maybe you don't have an answer to that at this point, but.
I think in the case, if you've been to that field site before, that's enough, John, and we just document that this is a proven site. Or else I'll be down and check it out for you.
I was next on the list. I had a question about the 1440 transfer model curricula. Do you have any idea how many no's we've had on our campus?
On this campus, I should know that because I did look at it. We had quite a few. Maybe 50% were no's. Some courses just cannot fit the 120 model, that's for sure. The general feeling at the meeting was that some faculty perhaps didn't understand the question, which is, it's not the faculty's fault, it's probably the way it was asked. It's not a question of looking to see if the units that they have taken exactly match our first 2 years curriculum. The question is, the 2 years of experience at community college, does that prepare them for our particular program, degree program? And a lot of the blame was put on the community colleges because part of the problem is they're just not very good at tracking their students. They're used to their students doing 70 units and then getting an associate degree. This is a completely new concept where the student would have to be advised about exactly what courses to take so that they can then transition into a degree program. So in other words, this is the first time a community college student would actually be in a degree program as opposed to just taking an assemblage of courses to satisfy an associate degree. So, but again, I'm only relaying what I heard. This is a hot item with the board, it's a hot item with the legislature, and it would be wise to take it seriously.
Senator Overton.
You mentioned this topic of research space, and I heard a rumor from what I would consider an unreliable source, but I wanted to bring it to you about potentially reallocating some space in Salazar and getting rid of some equipment. I think the one that was specifically mentioned was the X-ray refractometer. Have you heard anything about that?
No, that's a new one in me, and I thought I had big ears. Interesting. Totally new to me.
I'm glad to hear that. Good. Thank you.
Senator Birch.
Regarding the transfer from model curriculum, I think that communication, sociology, and another on this campus were tested, and I believe several of them said yes. But there may be some notes in our view that it could be partly a matter of a feeling of lack of faculty education
come, and we have very little say in implementing them. The good news is that we're having a second attempt at this. You'll see that we've got the form back again. We're being given a chance to rethink those no's. And I think we're having some January to return this to the Chancellor's office. So this is something.
Yes. We'll take that with part of the yes. I thought this was partly battery filled, but didn't have enough input from the beginning.
And that's a fair comment. And if we need more time, we'll ask for more time. We just need to be trying to comply because this is an important issue. It's an issue we have to take seriously with an executive order.
Senator Watt.
I was just wondering if you know, have all of the TMCs been identified? Or have they all been sent out? Because I don't believe, like, my department.
No, I don't think that will happen. I think there's just a select list at this point that we're working our way down. That's what's been returned to us. And we're having another look at that particular list and how that played out after that. I don't know how the list was drawn up. Maybe someone here can tell the provost. I'm imagining the community colleges have been put into where they wanted to shoot, the kind of degrees they wanted to go.
Those were the places where about 75% of the students are in. That's what it was.
And there are 16 of them that are done, and the final list is sort of out for comment now. And if your program is not on that list, there are no plans to create a TMC. So not all disciplines are created TMC. Senator Lee.
So the Senate Bill 1440 had some vague exceptions for ill-defined high unit programs. And everything I've seen coming through kind of ignores that. And I was wondering if anybody has tried to specify anything around that. So like I've got a 124 unit program in my department, my graduate degree. Does that mean that I should say yes if they can combine 60 plus 64? Or should
Not my understanding, this has to be a 60 plus 60. So if you can make the case that you cannot drop down to 120, then that would be an exemption. But, you know, we realize there will be some exemptions. And kinesiology is another one that's over 120, and probably will always be over 120. But the expectation is that 90% or so should be able to achieve a yes.
Senator Grant.
It seems like the intent of being able to finish in 60 units is that students can finish in 2 years. But the reality is certain courses are only offered every 3 semesters, in some cases only every 4 semesters. So in the case of my case, it was possible to answer yes without meaning that they can finish in 2 years. So is that on the radar that...
No, I'm not hearing anything about the time. It's about the number of units. Traditionally, when we're taking in transfer students, so many of the units don't count. So by the time they finish the degree, they've got an astronomical number of credits. So it's trying to be streamlined that process.
Senator
Hess.
Well, how do you answer all these better questions so quickly that I'm on the advisory board for the MCC now, and I know last week Professor Rosenberg was here asking about for the gender sexuality work group that space was a big issue, and so we've been told no over the years, no, we can't use the space joining the MCC that's used for storage, but a lot of us are thinking, well, why?
I'll look into it, okay? That's a new one in me, but I can ask.
Any further questions for the provost? One more. Senator Elson.
This is more a comment for those of you who are still working on your TMCs. SB 1440 contains two other provisions you might be interested in. One is specifically the lower division courses cannot be made to substitute for upper division courses that you may require. And the other one is, at the same time, you're not supposed to ask students to take courses that are similar to ones that they took in the transfer model. Thank you.
One other clarification, and thank you for that. It was also pointed out that if a student is missing an important course within their 60 units at the community college, you can put that course into your 60 as long as it still allows them to complete the degree. So
that's the kind of flexibility we're looking for.
All right. Thank you, Provost Bratterson. So we'll move on to Chair-elect Purser's report.
Hi, folks. This is the report for structure and functions. In addition to the business item that you have just acted on, structure and functions is moving a whole lot of nominations of various kinds along the way. The ones that are now completed include the Transportation Committee nomination, Alternative Transportation Committee nomination of Professor Lee, the Green Music Center recommendations that were really nominations from the schools. We've forwarded on those nominations. We still are looking for a nomination from education. We do not have a school nomination for the Green Music Center yet. Given that there's a dean in the room, I thought that these are coming from dean level appointments, so it would be great to get that one last spot filled. Thanks. Last but not least, we now have the two faculty members for the ORSP search committee. Director or search committee have been approved by executive committee. Those were Professor Nielsen and Professor Pretzelis. And you may have noticed, I'm just going to remind you because Laurel just sent it out again today, we have one more day before for nominations, self-nominations, other nominations to the search committee. We equal faculty member for the search committee for the director of the Multicultural Center. And that period closes tomorrow, so we sent out another reminder today. We do have one person who's put their name in, but if anybody else is thinking about doing that, you need to do it by June. Thank you.
Questions for Chair-elect Purser, Senator Romsberg?
I know that there's been a concern that was expressed to Angela Pistos, I believe, or maybe no, it was to Adam. I don't know if you received this from a professor in Cowles who indicated that the level of commitment of the possible 19 meetings over the next few months for smaller departments, the quote-unquote diversity department, so WGS, Cowles, AMCS, our departments where each of those only have three faculty members, and so our service load is arguably disproportionately high. And as such, well, I think there's people from each of those departments who have a strong stake in how that might move forward as a hire. Most of us have been very reluctant to take on another what sounds to be huge task. So I just wanted to make it known to publicly to everyone that there's been concern from each of those departments that the service requirement is ill suited in terms of the stated level of 19 meetings over the next couple of months to the people who are in those departments.
Matthew's not here, so I'm going to let you know what he said to us.
Okay.
and sort of why this sounds this way. Because I agree, I mean, it sounds huge, and if you've ever served on any search committee for anything, you know that the time is in fact huge. And part of that is driven by at least two factors. One, there are legal requirements with certain kinds of searches and sort of ethical requirements beyond the legal ones that everybody should be at every meeting. So if you're going to serve on the committee, then you need to be at every meeting with each candidate. Now, where that gets potentially burdensome is how many candidates you have. And so if you want a broad pool and many candidates, you have many meetings. So there's a real razor's edge there in terms of having a broad and really meaningful and really successful search and the amount of work on everyone's part that goes into that. And I absolutely hear the point that you're making. It's just, do we then have a smaller search with a smaller pool with fewer meetings? Is that what people would want? Or, you know, how do we want to slice that dilemma? So that's just the feedback that I would give. Since Matthew Lopez Phillips is not here, it is a committee that's operating from his shop, so I wouldn't be calling you speaking for him, but I would certainly say that would be part of the decision making.
Okay.
And I want to underscore that I don't in any way mean to imply that any of those three departments own university on this campus or should we be the sole oversight of that.
Any more questions for Chair Purser? Vice President Schlera, do you have a report?
I do. Just three quick items for the Senate. It's good to see all your folks. Number one, in my area of the university, this is the time when we complete all the audits. We do 5 audits, financial audits, operational audits of the campus, 1 for the university itself, and then 1 for each of our auxiliary organizations, foundations, student union, ASI, and some state enterprises. We've come through the audit cycle, and for us it's a big deal to get through that, and the staff for our auxiliary organizations and the staff throughout the entire campus are to be acknowledged for their excellence and the work that they've done and working with our external auditors. All 5 of the audits come with what's called a clean opinion, which is the highest standard you can get. So there's no material weaknesses in our financial controls or issues of that nature. The President's Budget Advisory Committee will take up the audit once it's formally released later on in the semester. The 4 auxiliary boards have all received the audit reports at their level. So I'm very pleased and grateful to everyone who makes the audit process go well, but more importantly, to the people who manage the resources at the school level, at the department level, to ensure that we follow the appropriate procedures. So it's a good story for those of us who worry about audit issues. Second, next week, Dr. Ron Armington, I'm able to report it, although he may not. Next week, the Executive Council of Presidents are going to consider a proposal that I bring over to all the presidents, along with Vice Chancellor Gail Brooks, for the CSU to move forward with the development of a common human resource system within the People's Health Oracle product. I bring it here only because one of the key things that we hope to do with the Common HR Initiative is to create functionality in something that I usually call faculty events. Because right now, PeopleSoft, really, from a human resource perspective, is not set up well to deal with the instances that happen in a faculty member's life, like RTP, or things of this nature. So as we get more into design, I may then want to ask you if you and the executive committee would consider perhaps asking faculty standards and cares to perhaps work with me and Melinda and Sally to talk through issues that if there were some things that would make a faculty member's life much more easy, technologically speaking, that maybe we could somehow work to get them incorporated into the combination of system. We're fortunate that both myself, fortunately, but happen to be there, but we're also fortunate to have Jason Wenberg, who's going to be part of that design process. So we have the ability to communicate into the design things that we might want to see in a common HR system. So if that evolves, perhaps in the executive committee we could discuss. Second, also in the area of CMS, I think it's next week, it might be the week after, this group that Ruben and others have asked me to chair for the CSU system called the CMS Executive Committee is going to take up a visioning process about what we think we'd like to see the student system within PeopleSoft Oracle look like 3 to 4 years in the future. Stated another way, what do we think students will expect from the PeopleSoft Oracle software 4 years from now? What role do apps play? Will there be apps? Will there be something else beyond apps? All these kinds of issues are things that we'd like to envision. We have 2 provosts that are sitting with me on this committee that are going to help to engage that visioning process along with 2 vice presidents for student affairs. But here, once again, is an opportunity where we could do some things locally. I'm thinking perhaps the student affairs committee of the academic senate, perhaps the AS senate will be helpful to both me and Jason to get ideas about what we think people who are 13 and 14 years old now are going to expect when they come and roll with us in years from now. It's just an opportunity that I wanted to make sure that you're all aware of, and you can help Jason and I communicate those things into the system-wide project. That would be very helpful to us. Those are my 3 items. Then, if there are any questions for any of the areas that I'm responsible for, I'm pleased to try to answer them, as well as comments on these 3 topics.
Senator Brandon.
recently heard in terms of registration for next summer that we're actually going to a different, vendor other than PeopleSoft Oracle, because there's going to be some kind of registration hiccup because of this switching to a new system. Is that not a new vendor?
No, what I think, and I'm going to turn to Ross and Jason to help me if I screw this up, which I'm inclined to do. What we're doing is upgrading PeopleSoft software from version 8.9 to 9.0, which brings a lot more functionality both on the HR and student side. So there's a period of time where PeopleSoft Oracle will be out of commission.
The system will actually be down in maybe 4 to 5 days, but we're asking that a few days prior, a few days after, let us shake out the bugs and actually do that. We're asking that the heavy registration periods, and that's going to be only at the end of June. So we've been working closely with Matthew and Andrew both trying to coordinate that time frame of orientation, registration, everything else to make sure that those things are accounted for with the time frame, but that will still stay with people.
Thank you,
Mr. Larry, could you expand a little bit more on how you're envisioning the Common HR initiative to do a better job at things like RTP?
Catherine. We've been around talking with provosts and ADDs and faculty affairs, chief research officers, deans of extended education, folks that feel more in the academic circles, not in that area. They indicated that it would be helpful as a professor was building their dossier or the portfolio that they put together as they received to RTP, that there could be maybe elements technologically that would be helpful. I don't know, I'm not way above my pay grade here. I'm not quite sure what I'm talking about. But it was an expression that was raised. Similarly, with the WASC accreditation process, certain provosts raised questions about how things might be easier if it could be incorporated into the HR component or even the student component of CMS. I wish I could be more specific, but you know I'm not. Well, maybe Jason, you're going to help me.
I can give you one, Catherine. One of the ones was for lecturers and eligibility and tracking WPUs to say that if you're a 1-year to 3-year, a lot of the people, most of the campuses are doing these things on spreadsheets. And everybody's sort of doing it a different way of how you're tracking, what level is, how are you recording what a WPU is, and who's eligible to come back for the next year in a 3-year contract versus the 1-year contract. Almost every campus that we talk to said those are manual processes. They're doing them on spreadsheets, so you have to pull out the files, you have to look and see who taught last time. There's all these different things, and we said there has to be a way to build an efficiency. The information has to be in the system that we can come back and track, and if the information's not there, we need to build some deals so that we can actually have an automated process so that it's much easier to track so that everybody's staying in line with the existing contract that we actually have. So we're just trying to get out of the paper and Excel file and manual processes of the academic affairs and faculty affairs. That's what they were saying with a lot of these troubles was trying to track those. That's just one example.
Would that apply to our version? I don't know the name of the forum, but it was either the department chairs where our workload is tracked as well, or where our new classical teaching.
So that, for instance, RTP of lecturers and those kinds of tools So we've been hearing some about it in the past, and we would definitely be willing to work with it to help save that whole paper morass that happens. And it can increase security as well.
And President Darmanian.
Larry, of your envisioning of a student system,
yes,
I'm sure, on cost of this effort, it was just that you miss it. But clearly, one of the most, probably the group you need to talk the most are the students.
Yes.
And you didn't mention that. Be sure that they are. They probably know what they might want to have as much as anybody else, and they are the ones who will be affected by it.
Yeah, thank you again for correcting me. I clearly, this is not to be disrespectful to the professors, but frankly, the students are the driving force. They've already come forward. I met just the other day with Colin and DB and asked the students to reflect with him about some of the things that he thought would be interesting. So, working with the ASS,
okay, so let's screw a little. We'll go to the business side and then come back to any more questions for Vice President Schwerner. So our business item number two is a resolution from the Senate Diversity Subcommittee regarding the subsidization of the new CAP student teacher program students. Senator Cass.
So the Academic Senate of Sonoma State University recommends that the president of the university identify a funding source to provide a subsidy to pay the new $50 per semester student fee for counseling and psychological services, CAP, for all students who receive Pell Grants. And then the rationale goes into the fact that part of our diversity vision statement is that Sonoma State has a strong commitment to supporting, retaining, and attracting students who reflect the diversity of our larger society. And an important goal of our university and CSU as a whole, that is like the mandated graduation initiative, is to increase the number of economically disadvantaged students and help them achieve graduation. Now, according to the U.S. News and World Report, which puts out an annual summary, I have a quote here, they say many experts say that count figures, that is the number of students who receive Pell Grants, which are national grants, are the best available gauge of how many low-income undergrads there are on a given campus. And then it says that SSU had 22% in the fall of 2009, according to our Office of Institutional Research. And at the same time, that sounds like a lot of students who are at the very lowest economic rung, but if you look at the page that I just handed out that has a slightly updated figure, that some of our CSU campuses have as many as Bakersfield has 63% of their students receive Pell Grants. And there's about 20, I think there's 20 CSUs in this list. And it says here as an update that Sonoma State has about 25% in this current year, but we're still at a very low level. So even though it sounds like a lot of students, relative to the other CSUs, it isn't that many. And at the same time, we do want to increase the diversity and economically disadvantaged students who are able to attend on campus. So in order to do that, one of the things that we can do is help subsidize some of the local fees that the Pell Grants do not cover. Because it turns out that students who receive Pell Grants or the state grants, those fees don't cover, those grants don't cover any increase in local fees that are just for Sonoma State. And so basically students have to figure out how to pay for those out of pocket. Okay. Now the other fact that we want to consider is that 16.3% of the population of our state now lives below the federal poverty level of 22,100. So if that means when it's out of pocket, $50 a semester,
large amount of money for someone who is living on these grants and trying to go to school, probably already working to try to help pay their costs for living and things like food and transportation. So the executive committee asked that we give some data. So if you look at the right behind the resolution, I have first my calendars or visits from the chancellor's office website. The history of the campus-based fee as known today over the last 10 years. And again, these are fees that Pell Grants will increase to cover, and state grants will increase to cover. So the fees have gone up in the last 10 years, the campus-based fees from $604 to currently, last year, the year 10-11, to $1,278. Actually, this year, it would be another $100 on top of that, because the new CAPS fee just started this semester, $50 a semester, so another $100 on top of the $1,278. All right. And then another figure they asked us, the executive committee asked us to get was, how do we compare with the fees on other CSU campuses? So that's on the next page, that has California State University tuition and fees. All of the undergraduate tuition on the left, in the left column, is the same, because that's a statewide fee. And then the campus mandatory fees are listed, and Sonoma State is in alphabetic order this time, near the bottom there. And that total for the campus mandatory fees is the same, $1,278. Does not include the new fee this year. And as you can see, we're one of the highest cost campuses in the CSU. In this list, I think we're almost tied with Chico with our new $100 fee, unless they have a new fee this year also. And so again, it is expensive for these particular students to come to our campus. And then finally, going to institutional research on campus, on the last page, we have the number of Pell Grants that were given in 2009. So I apologize, the figures that I have, like the latest figure I could get from institutional research was for 2009-10. The most recent report just changed theirs to the year 10-11, but we're basically in the 20% to 25% of our students get Pell Grants. And so that figure's there. So in 2009, 1,674 students. All right. Now, so we think that this subsidy will help both keep students here by helping them subsidize their income so that they don't have to take money out of their living expenses to pay any $100 fee. And also, we think it will help attract students to come here. And as the last paragraph says, there are several possible sources of income to defray the cost. One is to provide income-based scholarships to Pell students by raising funds from private donations, including local businesses. Now, as you can see on the Pell Grant sheet that was handed out separately, it turns out that our scholarships that we raise money for, according to our scholarship office, students must have a minimum cumulative GPA of 3.0. And then if there are scholarships that also specify financial need, then they can be considered for those. But they still have to have the 3.0 first. And so one possibility perhaps have another source of call it scholarships, call it subsidies, that don't have that GPA cutoff. For example, I just did an athletics advisory council meeting. And athletic scholarships, which are provided in the range of $200,000 to $400,000 a year, those have a cutoff of 2.0 because that's the NCAA regulation. So it is possible to have funding that isn't tied to a 3.0. It's just a question of making that decision and then looking at how it can be done. Another possibility is to reinstate the general fund monies that were used to support CAPS until this semester, at least some portion of them to help cover those, that basically 20 to 25% of the very lowest income students.
Okay, so let me remind you, this is a first reading. And the purpose of a first reading is a local invention. That's not in our rules, that's in our bylaws. The purpose of a first reading is for us to become familiar with the proposal, give the proposer some feedback if there are issues and major objections, but then to take it back and have a chance to consult with your constituents between now and the next meeting. Next meeting, with the idea being you have a chance then to think about it and consult it and come to a decision before we come back for a second reading. So the primary things I'd like you to focus on for the discussion are questions of clarification, any major objections that you see, and suggestions for improvement. So, Senator Buckley.
Well, I just wanted to point out two things. First of all, I'm on board with the general idea, the goal, what you're trying to achieve with this. But I guess two things. First would be that without the new student center fee that the student consultants are voted for, we'd actually be below average for the whole system.
This fee is only secured last year. They don't include even the new caps fee, and they don't include any new student center fee. This is just the fee through the spring of last year.
So it's $388 from last year.
The new student center fee isn't implemented yet, but the caps fee just started this semester.
Sure. Can you not just have a conversation there?
I thought you were going to answer that.
Yeah, why don't you finish, Senator Buckley, and then go back.
Well, I mean, it seems like a sort of intentional approach. I mean, we're suggesting that we subsidize one particular fee and there are many others, six others. Why would they not also be subsidized? Sort of set the precedent that we're collectively willing to subsidize those fees on a mean basis. And it begs the question, well, why don't we subsidize it at all? And that's obviously something we probably can't afford to do.
Okay. So, let's see. President Darmanian.
I just want to make a clarification about the recognition of the fees on financial aid. Financial aid is based upon the cost of education. The local fees are included in the cost of education. Then the different financial aid packages recognize that cost of education. It's not a one-to-one necessarily. Therefore, for a student, as the cost of education goes up, it might go up by that $50 a semester, might go only by $20, because it really is based upon that, but it is recognized. As a matter of fact, if you look at the private universities, they take the lion's share of the Pell allocations because the cost of education is, in most cases, four or five times higher than that of the public university. But it is recognized in the cost of education upon which the financial aid packages, each one is derived from.
Senators, I'd like you to collect things that you'd like to respond to from all of the speakers, and then I'll ask you to do them all at once, if that's all right. Thanks. Senator Sengas.
So, just to make it clear, this only addresses the undergraduate students, and that the graduate students do have the same fee increase, but it wouldn't help them. Is that correct?
I'm supposed to wait till the end.
Yeah,
is that a clarification thing?
Okay.
My understanding is that that graduate students don't receive Pell grants.
Right.
Correct.
Vice President Schlarer.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure everyone understood that it's not possible to use the general fund or operating fund for student scholarships.
Senator Madani.
My comments turn in the same direction as Senator Buckley's. I don't really understand why I'm picking on one particular fee to subsidize when there are so many others. Choice doesn't make sense.
Okay, Senator Rumsford.
I think you're talking about $20,000 to $25,000 approximately, or around $20,000 would be the total cost of this. Is that correct? Based on the number of students who are estimated, you've got 20 to 25% of an 8,000 population, $100 fee. I guess I just want to know, like, what's the actual number or estimated range of the number we're talking about for the total cost of this?
Okay, Senator Buckley, and then I'm going to let Senator Cabanas respond. Okay, Senator Cabanas.
Okay, why not other fees That's a good question, and it's something I think we want to look at in the future in terms of looking at diversifying our campus more, that the economic burden that we're putting on students from very, very low-income homes, the very lowest of the low-income. And this was a start, and the reason we considered this thing was because it, this just started this semester, and it was something added on to all of the others, and it seemed like a reasonable place to start to get a conversation of how to raise or help with additional monies to cover some of these local expenses that students have. So that's why. But certainly it's something to look at for the future, for a future discussion. B, the cost, but President Armenian said, according to, we talk about the cost of education in terms of the grant. Now, if you look at the handout from the Telegram handout, this is the issue that I gave you today. There's a quote here from the financial aid office. Says the federal Pell Grant is not tied to our fee increases at all. Our local fees, which we call the campus space fees, are not covered by any specific grant. Increases to the campus fees must be paid out of the student's other financial aid. So they do have a financial aid package. And if anything can be increased, it is usually student or parent loans. And so the thing is that their financial aid package can be increased, but they can get loans, which they then have to pay off. And a student is here 6 years, $600 for this one fee. And the interest, it can add up. So they can get loans, but we're saying that's still a burden, especially on your very lowest income homes. We're talking very low income here. And if you look at the figures for California, the poverty is 22,000. $22,000 is the poverty line. I mean, we're talking to people who don't count $600. Okay, let's see. I'm not supposed to be back to that. And then, total money, what I think the easy thing to do is you look at that page from IR, Institutional Resources, 1,674 ballpark figure, and just add to zero because it's $100 a year. And that would give you $167,400, if I did my math right. And I just want to point out that according to the Athletics Advisory Council that I attended this morning, administration finance helps with $200,000 a year for athletic scholarship. So this is not that extraordinary an amount, I think, if we want to do it. And lastly, if general fund money can't cover scholarships, we also are talking about things like a subsidy or perhaps other ways to do it. But the thing is that if we want to do it, then we can look for a way to do it.
All right, we're almost out of time. I'm going to take one more comment, which is... Thank you. Is there one more? Okay, last word, Senator Roberts.
Thank you very much. So, in the spirit of diversity, which I really want to say that I support this, I would like to question the rationale, thank you, it's late today, the rationale behind just the Pell Grant students. I understand the research that you have here, and I really appreciate it, that the assumption is they're the poorest students receiving grants, but I would question that. For example, we do have students on campus who are children of disabled veterans who have fee waivers, and that's the only reason they can be here on this campus is because of fee waivers, because otherwise they would not be able to afford that. And this is not included in their fee waiver. So I would like to see us be more inclusive, that if we're concerned about the fees for students who receive financial aid, we should be concerned about the fees for all students who receive financial aid.
Thank you. All right, thank you. So, talk about that with your constituents. Come back next time, prepare for a final discussion and vote. All right, let's...
while we're on the business items, let's go on to item number three. Senator Madaba.
Yes.
Have her first reading.
Senator, we have in front of us for this policy change, which is being brought forward by the dispute resolution board. It looks like a lot, but it's really not that much. It's taking the procedures out of the different policies that are related to grade appeal, agreement, and community play referendum. As it stands, there were similar policies embedded within each one of those blue paper policies, and every time you changed one thing, then you had to go through and change everything else. There is a formal dispute resolution policy, procedural policy, available online. So all of that is still there, and it would be easy to, if we need to change formal resolution procedures, we can easily do that. All we want to do here is remove those policies, those procedures from the policy. And the only other substantive change is in the cheating and plagiarism policy, we used to assign, I think it would be RD, if the case hadn't yet been resolved, and now it's being switched to the RP, which is what you can put in people's up.
So, questions, suggestions, major objections, Senator Watershed.
I would like to move. I would like to move to waive the first reading.
All right. Okay. So there's only one person on the speaker's list so far. So we'll. Is there a second for that motion?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. So we move immediately. Oh, no, there is discussion on that. Okay, so any discussion on waiving the first reading? Senator Chan.
I would ask for a couple minutes for clarifying questions.
Senator Sagas.
In a similar sense, I think that if we want the students to have confidence that we're being careful with something as important as these sorts of issues, that we go slow. Or not slow, but don't rush. I think we have enough time. I don't think that there's any urgency to make us do this any faster, and I really would like to have two cycles if possible.
Senator
Lees. Yes, I agree.
So any more conversation on the motion to waive the first reading? Senator Brad.
Is there any urgency on this that another 2 weeks?
I understand that the dispute resolution board hasn't had any cases brought yet this year, so there's one case.
There's one case.
Right. That is one case.
Right, that's what she said. Okay. All right, so we're going to vote now on waiving the first reading. So a yes vote is voting to do a second reading and making a decision today. A no vote is to hold another cycle. So all those in favor of waiving the first reading, raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay, so we're staying in a first reading. So clarifying questions, objections, major objections, things like that. I think Senator Shand was on that list. Yes.
I just want to make sure this is... I understand this is mostly housekeeping, but that the policies would direct one to procedural online in case the grant could be just one place to change. Are there any substantive changes to procedure beyond what we've already taken?
Other comments, questions? Senator Wright,
is there any conceivable circumstance in which you want these three policies to have different?
I can't think of any off the top of my head. I think for simplicity's sake, having one formal presentation of teachers going forward.
Okay. Any more discussion of this one? All right. So take the time between now and next time to look through it. Make sure that you're good with the procedures all moving to their own document, and we'll pick it up next time. All right. Thank you. So, we're back to reports. Vice President Lopez Phillips isn't here, so we'll move on to Vice President of Associated Students, Raymond.
This week, at the Associated Student Senate, the Senate passed a recommendation to revise the smoking policy. Passed a recommendation to revise the smoking policy on campus. The substantive change is that the board has asked the university to move the permitted smoking zone to 100 feet. So currently the policy reads 20 feet from buildings, walkways, stairwells, etc. And then the board has asked the university to move that to 100 feet within the central campus boundaries. And the central campus is defined as Copeland Creek and then Redwood, which is the road that runs the circle from, it's essentially the road that goes along the inside of campus. So that recommendation has been, will be forwarded to the president's office shortly. Also later, or tonight, their ASP is hosting what's called Midnight Madness. It's kind of the kickoff to the basketball season, where the basketball team can now start practicing tomorrow. It's a pep rally event of sorts. Lots of things will be given away. It's not at midnight, thank you. It starts at 9 o'clock tonight. It goes until midnight. It's an exciting event, lots of spirit. It's really kind of the kickoff to the basketball season. And it's a great way to kind of pump up school spirit. Those are the big events from the students this week.
All right, Senator Lee.
I'm curious, more than anything else, as to why the ASI, the student governance group, and looking at the smoking policy, didn't look to have this policy applied to student housing.
I think we kind of back and forth on the issue. It was because that was a place where students live, it would be, and it's much more enclosed, it would be much more difficult for students to find 100 feet. It's not as spread out, the residential community is not as spread out as much of the rest of campus. And so we kind of went back and forth, and it was actually one of the more contentious issues. And that's the rationale, that was the rationale. And how it ended up was it was because it was more condensed, and we didn't want to, we thought it would be too constricted, and we didn't want students walking out in the parking lot at 10 o'clock at night to go have their smoke, since that would be 100 feet away. We'd rather
stay by Senator Nelson.
That issue aside, thank you very much for recommending that that change be made on someone who will recommend it.
Any more questions for Vice President Ramey, Senator Wilson?
Are there some units in the residence which are within 100 feet of our river circle? And so would those residences be designated as smoking units?
It's not 100 feet from Redwood Circle. It's 100 feet from buildings, walkways, covered areas. I don't have the policy in front of me, but yeah.
Any more questions? Okay. Thank you, Senator Raymond. So let's see. Statewide Senator Nelson, do you have a report?
If you're interested, Senator Wilson sent out on Senate Talk a link to issue online websites, and there's some very interesting documents there, one of which mentioned something about who's going to get the profits. The same thing about the WIS, because one of the decisions that has to be made, and that's one of the more controversial aspects of this kind of initiative, privatizing for at least for-profit education companies at the university. So, our meetings are in a couple of weeks, so we don't have.
Okay, Senator Wilson, do you have additional report? Are there questions for our statewide senators? I encourage you to take a look at that email about CSU Online. It's a big thing coming down the pike. It's really big. Senator Ross,
I guess in relation to that, I don't have a question because it's so, it feels like it's very vague right now. Is that just the status of it, that it's really vague, that we don't know things like how fast people will be hired in it, and that. We don't know anything, right? If we do, I guess that's my question, is what do we know like, beyond the fact that there's a plan to do this?
Not much.
Well, I think it's this week that they're actually having interviews with the director, the online director.
I'm going to respond to that briefly too. Ben Quillian from the Chancellor's Office talked with the chairs of all the academic senates last Thursday about this, and this was the biggest issue we talked about. And he kept saying, it's just the group president said, who formed this technology steering committee, I think it's called, said we need to get into this field before the privates take it all over. So let's hire somebody to figure out what we're going to do. And he swore up and down, we don't know what it is yet. So that's what our $50,000 is going for. All right. Any more questions for the state legislator? Senator Brown.
I'm curious about the funding for this CSU online, and how is that established? How is the director's position for the CSU online going to be funded?
President Armandona answered that last time around. I think your language was it was a coalition of the willing. 16 or 17 campuses agreed to put $2,000 in, and then the rest of, President Armandona used the language, the rest of the campuses were volunteered to bring in the 2,000 piece. You don't see the volunteer on the CSU online language. CSU online says something like agreed to or wanted to or something. I don't remember the language, but it implies more of an act of consent as opposed to we're volunteer.
So, I do recall that, and I just want to understand that the $1.something million that has been accumulated through these voluntary efforts of the 18 CSUs, that salary is not going to be paid by the director. I just want to be clear that the additional funding is going to go where?
The Steve White Senator on the online initiative committee or whatever it was, I'm sorry, calling the joke, said on the statewide listserv that he assumes that will go to things like startup cost advertising, a developing programs, that kind of thing. I actually tried to find out what the specific salary was going to be. And the most specific language that anybody on the statewide listserv could come up with was commensurate with experience and preparation. And it's not on at least the mind purification, it's not on the job description. So I don't know what the salary is. Perhaps the president knows?
You have described
it. Any further questions for our statewide senators? All right. So we'll move on to standing committee reports. First, academic planning, Senator Scott.
Thank you. APC is engaged in the process of working through the document we're drafting on academic priorities from our various constituencies. So representatives from the committee have surveyed their constituencies with respect to program, department, school, and we've developed a draft document on academic planning priorities for those represented on our committee. As we are working through the document, it became evident to us that one of the other key elements of the process of looking at priorities was resource allocation. Marilyn Sargent, our institutional research person, sits on our committee as an ex officio, so she is helping us think about how we might identify the resource allocation process and maybe connect in some of the language that was part of the discussion today, the processes of both the administration and the faculty in thinking about how we collaborate in making planning decisions. This work will be ongoing for our committee. The synthesis of the discussion today came up with three topics that we think kind of capture the essence of the discussion, which are around identity of the university. This is in terms of long-range planning, how we would think about, with respect to our vision for ourselves as a university, what our planning priorities are, and make sure that we allocate resources accordingly, how we collaborate in the process of doing academic planning, and in that vein, Co-Chair Roberts and myself have reached out to EPC and requested a meeting with the Chair, Armin Linsky, and our liaison from EPC, Elaine Newman, so we can talk about how we can come together as two Senate committees engaged in curriculum planning and curriculum in terms of focus to make better use of our efforts. And finally, faculty engagement. We feel that we're coming into an era in which some of the things that we have identified through conversations about identity and in our various committees that we think are priorities for our campus require a new energy on the part of all faculty to engage in making sure that we're keeping up abreast of what each of the committees are doing with respect to their minutes and their tasks and activities, not just here at the Senate, but faculty-wide. So we're going to be attempting to move forward in discussions around these priorities to eventually make recommendations to the Senate about how we think we can move forward. Thank you, Dr. Marble.
All right, questions for APC Chair Estrada? Senator Cabanas?
Last spring, our woman came to our Student Diversity Subcommittee and asked us to help with collaborate with different committees about issues of diversity. And he said he was doing the same thing with collaborating around issues of sustainability, and the third one was community engagement, and that he was looking at ways that the different standing committees and other committees of involved faculty could be looking at those three issues. So are those three things kind of tied in or incorporated into what you're doing now? Is this like the next stage of that?
I think what we're trying to do, because we have some new members on the committee and we've had other members retire and move on, we're trying to start from an organic process from the bottom up. What are our planning priorities? How they might relate to some of the planning documents, some of the other endeavors on campus around identity, without being locked into diversity, sustainability, and community engagement necessarily, but with a vein to honoring those and incorporating them into the process where they fit through this kind of an organic process. So we do have that as a reference, but we're starting from kind of from the ground up to see where we get.
Other questions? Okay, is there anybody here intending to give a report for the Educational Policies Committee? This chair, Senator Galinsky, is out of town today. Okay, so next is Faculty Standards and Affairs. Senator Sejas.
Okay, we met with the provost today as a sort of a meet and greet kind of thing with our particular group. It was an enjoyable conversation. It was nice to see the directions that we're going in, and it's very clear that he catches on quick. He also understands, I think, the role of FSAC in the larger system, so that's great. So thank you for coming. We are looking ahead to the issues of SETIs, actually, because when we were approached by the President's Diversity Council. I was trying to figure out what that C stood for. They had asked us to consider adding a couple of questions regarding diversity to the SETIs, which seems reasonable enough. But as we started looking at it, we suddenly realized that the SETIs haven't been looked at in an awful long time, and if these were going to be relevant questions, we should make sure we're adding them to relevant questions. And so after consulting with the executive committee, we've decided to open this up as a project for this year. So if you have thoughts, concerns, maybe ways that you could help us do this, here I am. Or even better, get in touch with your school's representative. Let's see, what else? We're also responding to the latest suggestions for changes to the disruptive students' behaviors so we can see how faculty responds to disruptive student behaviors, what would be appropriate, and so we're moving forward on that. We would also ask faculty who are interested in what's going to become of the Faculty Center to keep in mind the calls that have been coming out from the provost and from our chair, because this is the year that we're trying to figure out what are we going to have now that we have this thing. So please get in touch with the Professional Development Subcommittee, who are in effect the advisory board for this emerging Faculty Center. But you can also try and run it through us, since they're a subcommittee of ours. I mean, I'll make sure it gets to the right place. And then finally, next our next meeting, which normally would be at 1 to 3 on the 28th of this month, we're moving it to noon to 1. It's going to be a shortened session so that we could attend the guest speaker that the provost is going to be bringing to campus, because we thought that would be particularly salient for faculty affairs folks to be attending. So that's just a change in case you wanted to come and visit us and shock us too. that's my report.
And just real quickly following up on that, make sure you read that email about that speaker on the 27th in Library 3001, kind of a kickoff for the new Faculty Center, and talk about the changing landscape of education. Talk in conversation. It's not intended to be a talking head kind of event. Senator Nelson.
I'm asking you because I'm not sure who else to ask. I mentioned the policy regarding disruptive behavior. Do you know whether or not we have the authority, the right, whatever, to take a cell phone away from students and move it on the front podium or the remainder of the classroom if they are being disrupted using their cell phone? And serious question.
Yeah, well, I can easily imagine. I don't know that we have the authority, and in fact, part of what we're trying to iron out in this policy is just what authority do we have if somebody's doing something disruptive. I think the tradition has been if there's something really disruptive, we can ask people to leave, but we can't take their personal property away from them as far as I know. I don't see anything in the policy that says that that's in there. So. That response makes me a little nervous, but I'm just speaking, not, you know, not a lawyer, and on my finger.
So the alternative then would be to ask them to leave the classroom?
Yeah. That is a traditional thing. If there's something disruptive going on, I think that has a long-standing tradition.
Thank you.
Senator Bass.
What's the time of that October 27th?
It's 1:30 to 3, thank you, until it's 3001. Okay, any further questions for FSAC? All right, move on to the Student Affairs Committee report. Senator Madoff.
I'll make a report. I think what we've been working on has been quite visible.
Yep.
All right, any questions for Student Affairs Committee? All right. Let's see, is there anybody here with a report from CFA? Sometimes CFA Retinario passes one on. Okay, and staff representative Baker is not here. Are there any items for the good of the order? Events coming up we should all know about? Exciting happenings? All right, we're adjourned.